IVM.
Hi, I'm Satyajit.
Hi, I'm Racheta.
Welcome to Paperback by the Open Library Project.
We have as our guest today Dhananjay Chak. He is the host of Edges and Sledges podcast on IVM Podcasts. In the first half, we discuss Sanjay Manjrekar's Imperfect.
In the second half, we discuss The Dinner by Herman Koch and A Brief History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson. Happy listening.
This book is about me, my career, my life, my strengths and weaknesses, my successes and failures. Every individual loves a uniquely different life. Life stories are always interesting. No one leads an uneventful life. Having been a sportsman, I also want young, aspiring sportsmen to learn from my careers. Like a father once said to his son, I made 20 mistakes in my life, you'll make 20 new ones.
Thank you, Dhananjay Chak. That was an excerpt from the book Imperfect by Sanjay Manjrekar. We'll be right back after this to discuss the book in further detail. Welcome to Paperback by the Open Library Project. I am your co-host Satyajit, otherwise known as Onion Knight in most food circles. I'm hosting this podcast with my co-founder at the Open Library Project, Racheta Sharma.
Hi guys, my name is Racheta. I'm an ex-banker, social impact entrepreneur, podcaster, writer, publisher, and inveterate learner. The Open Library Project is a curated library service which is offered to corporates on a subscription basis. The idea here is to create value, build a knowledge community, and encourage a growth mindset amongst our members.
Today we have with us on the show Dhananjay Chak, or DJ as he's known. DJ is a podcast host as well and hosts the Edges and Sledges podcast here on the IVM network. Hey DJ, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Satyajit. Great to be on the show. Pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. So tell us, before we get into Sanjay Manjrekar's Imperfect, let's talk about Edges and Sledges a little bit. How did you decide to do a podcast? And obviously, you're interested in cricket. So, you know, how did watching cricket translate into, you know, creating a show around it?
So, I run the podcast along with two other friends of mine, Varun and Ashwin. So, mm-hmm. three of us used to run a blog called One Tip, One Hand.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
that's a great name.
Yeah, for 3 or 4 years, we ran that blog. And we played cricket as well as kids. We kind of grew up together. We went to the same school. Mm-hmm. So there was always that passion for cricket. Mm-hmm. And Varun and I actually went to Cape Town to watch India play a cricket match.
Wow. Okay.
And they allow you onto the outfield in Cape Town at the Newlands Cricket Ground. So it was amazing. So it's a test ground.
Wow. I can recall the Cape Town, the ambience of it. It's amazing they allow you on the outfield.
During the innings break. And you've got the Table Mountain in the background. Yeah, Virat Kohli just scored 116, not out. Life was pretty good. They serve a few beverages in the
stands. That's one of the things that you get in
restaurants. It's just really hot, so you've got to stay hydrated.
Right.
So we went out onto the outfield and we went live from our Facebook Live page.
Okay.
And people were writing in and asking us questions and we were answering them. We were like showing them the ground and what was going on over there. So most of the crowd was on the pitch in the innings break. And then that idea actually kind of translated into why don't we go live on Facebook once a week? Because we got a lot of nice feedback. People were writing in and telling us about, it was really nice to see you guys there. Mm. It's really good that you're so passionate about the game. So that translated into a live Facebook show.
Okay.
Which then we took the audio from and created a podcast.
Wow.
And then somehow or the other, we ended up being on the IVM podcast network about a year into our podcast. And here we are. We've done 97 episodes and hopefully we'll do a few more.
Wow. Amazing.
Congratulations.
So this is out every week, right?
Yes, every Monday. So okay. If you guys like cricket, please go and listen to it.
Definitely. We'll be tuning in for sure. So... cricket is like a topic we could just go on and on about.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, Virat Kohli is a topic that Satyajit can go on.
Yeah. But let's talk about Sanjay Manjrekar. Interesting fact, I used to stay in the same building as Sanjay Manjrekar growing up. And
did you play with him in the...
He did play with us, actually. Yeah. He used to come... So when he was not on tour, he used to play. We had a small playground downstairs, and he used to come and play with us. And you know, he was quite encouraging of us to. He kind of encouraged us to go for the shots, which was against his own playing style.
He wanted to bat, na. He wanted to get out.
Yeah, but he was like, you know what? If you want to become semi-professional, professional, anything, you know, you got to be able to hit the shots. So you know, don't be afraid of breaking anything. That was one of the things that he kind of imbibed to us as the kids playing downstairs. And he used to always get us back goodies from, you know, his tours and all, like wristbands, headbands, and like paraphernalia of his sponsor.
The Will sticker.
Wills. Yeah.
good thing to give to children.
So, yeah, a very funny story about Sanjay Manjrekar. He had done this tour in Australia, and, you know, it didn't do very well. So, back in the day when you got out on zero, they used to put a duck walking across the screen. So, I was maybe 4 at the time, and my younger brother was 2 years old. And we happened to meet him in the corridor, the lobby of the building. And my brother, being all of 2, you know, just looks at him and just goes like, "Hey, quack, 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 quack." And my mom was mortified. Yeah. She's like, "I'm so sorry. I don't know what to say." But,
that's a great story. That's a great story. I think that was just after his Pakistan tour, where he'd done very well, and he was seen as the next up and coming thing, and then he came crashing down.
So tell us a little bit about the book. How did you land up picking it up?
The highlight for you in the book, perhaps.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting book. I mean, you've all probably heard Sanjay Manjrekar as a commentator. You've seen him as a cricketer. The book, actually, surprisingly, because I'm not his biggest fan as a commentator, and I mean, he was a good cricketer, and I wouldn't say that he was an amazing cricketer. He was a good cricketer. But the book is interesting for me particularly because it's a very honest book. It talks about his relationship with his father, which I don't know whether you know his father.
His father was a cricketer as well.
Yes,
right?
Mr. Vijay Manjrekar.
Yes. Very accomplished.
Yes, yes. And
acclaimed.
Very, very big name in the Bombay cricket circles. Obviously played for India as well. But the pressure that having such a successful father in the same profession and what that comes with. So it was a very refreshing kind of take on a father-son relationship in a sporting context. And he didn't hold back. His father is obviously passed on now, but he talks about his father and how difficult a relationship it was. Talks about growing up playing cricket, how he went through various phases. He's very honest about his own attitude towards things as well, how he was very arrogant when he did well, he felt. And when he looks back now, and now he's a father as well, and he sees how he could have done differently if the pressure was slightly less and things like that. And he obviously talks about his relationship with Sachin because they were contemporaries. And
did he always want to be a cricketer though, or was it because his dad was so accomplished in the field?
I don't think he wanted, he knew what else he would do.
Yeah.
Right. And all the chat around him was about being a cricketer.
Right.
So there wasn't, I don't think he saw anything beyond that. It's kind of a very blinkered view in life. And I suppose you have to be that to be able to succeed with the kind of intense competition that Bombay cricket had back then. Mumbai cricket still does.
It's very interesting because we in fact spoke to Ajit Akarkar's wife. She was a guest on our show the other day. She was also, her son is now a sportsman, and Ajit, of course, was very successful.
She gave a nice perspective as a wife
To a cricketer. It just seems to me that, you know, cricket is so, it's beyond even religion in our country. And to get into cricket and to represent, now you represent, you know, IPL teams and all. But before it was so intense that, you know, you had just had 16 spots for the international team, right? There was nothing else. There was no prestige in being a Ranji player. There was no money in being, there was prestige, there was no money in it, right? It was not a profession you could take up. But post the IPL, things have completely changed. Another example that I can give you is that Shreyas Iyer. He grew up 2 buildings down from where I live in Prabhadevi. And we've literally seen him grow up into becoming what he is now. And it's taken so much struggle, you know, like we've been following him for so many years. He actually did really well in his first IPL. And you expect him to take a meteoric path from there. But honestly, like, he's just been grinding it out for the next 3 years, 4 years after that. And now he's kind of made his mark in the Indian cricket team.
Were there any windows left in your locality? Because it seems like you only had cricketers growing up there.
Very well reinforced and very accommodating neighbors, I would
say. Hopefully you got your ball back once you went into their balcony and stuff.
We always got the ball back. No,
did you all get free tickets though?
Sometimes we did. That's something that we definitely got benefits for, like getting free tickets sometimes from Mr. Manjrekar.
But that's really nice. I mean, for him to give you free tickets, for him to give the kids in the colony some pointers and stuff, it's nice. Because one of the reasons I actually picked up the book was because of the Jadeja controversy that took place during the World Cup, the bits and pieces that went
Twitter
down.
Argument that was happening, right?
Yeah.
And is it mentioned in the book? Is it kind of addressed?
No, so it's before all of that. So the book released before the whole the controversy broke. So it was one of the reasons why I picked up the book to see, I mean, what has he got to say about himself?
Right. Because like if there's a whole book, there must be something.
Because Jadeja actually says, I'm still playing cricket for India and all of that stuff. So, but I mean, it's a fantastic book for somebody who wants to see how hard he's worked at being a commentator as well. Because it's easy for us to sit and criticize, right? I mean, we do it day in, day out, we're armchair critics.
Yeah.
He's an armchair critic in some ways as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he's played the game and there is got to be some level of respect for that. But he also says that he's had to work very hard to bring excitement into his voice for things like the IPL.
Right.
Because he's not naturally suited to something like that. Yeah. Because he's, as a batsman, he was a very conservative batsman. As a person, he's been a conservative person. But to commentate on the IPL, you've got to have that Danny Morrison kind of crazy, enthusiastic voice and stuff. So
the double G's are in
That's it. Now it's the double G's and the DC's. I don't know how it deals with it.
Right, right. But so very interesting that you actually, I was very surprised that this was one of the books we would be discussing today. Mm-hmm. And any other insights from the book in terms of, you know, like, of course, it's very tough to be a cricketer's son and then make it into the Indian cricket team. But in general, about the atmosphere of Mumbai, or do you think it's an advantage to be born in like in Bombay, where, you know, cricket is not just pursued, it's like followed very passionately. It's looked as a way out for some people, right? When you come from,
if you want to make it big, you have to come to Bombay.
When you come from trying circumstances, cricket, Bollywood, these are one of the few ways out of you know, extreme circumstances. So is kind of Bombay mentioned in the book and the atmosphere of Bombay?
So Mumbai and Bombay are very obviously a big focus of the book, because he grew up here, his father played, he went to Poddar College, I think, where he scored a lot of runs for college cricket on tour, in fact, which is what catapulted him into the Indian team and the Pakistan tour, where he did fantastically.
Yeah.
So Bombay is a very central theme to him. He's a Mumbaikar, of course, through and through. But to answer your question, I think that has changed now with people from smaller towns.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the biggest example is Ranchi, right? And I'm a huge MS Dhoni fan. So you can see that there's obviously people from smaller towns who are now coming into the Indian cricket team. You've seen people, Jadeja is another example. Suresh Raina is a person who lived in a sports hostel for years. He went there, I think, when he was a 12-year-old. And I mean, again, we can sit here and criticize people without knowing what their backstory is. You see, Prithvi Shaw has come from very trying circumstances. Hanuma Vihari from Andhra, he's got a single parent as well. Virat Kohli is a single parent, is a child of a single parent as well. So
And it's difficult. I think it needs a lot of discipline and a good balanced diet, hard work. A lot goes into, you know, being where they are.
Preparing yourself to be a cricketer. You know, like there's some shows on Netflix and Amazon and all now which go into a little bit about cricket. And one show called Selection Day.
Yeah, I've watched it.
Which
is,
it's
those two kids, right?
It's those two kids. Yeah. And it's very insightful into the kind of pressure that a parent puts on a child to become a cricketer.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, is, I don't know, I never thought about it like that. But apparently it's something that's very prevalent when you start doing well in sports, you know. You really get pushed by your parents to extreme circumstances. So,
but Manjrekar as well, I mean, if you've just grown up in an atmosphere where only cricket is discussed all the time around where your dad's friends are cricketers, you're playing cricket, your performance is being discussed, you're playing cricket in some maidan in a godforsaken place, but your dad's friend is there to report to him.
Right.
So, I mean, the kind of pressure that he would have been under is, I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's changed, as you say now. Mm-hmm. Election day is a prime example. And now with social media,
it's a different
world. You've got like 4-year-old kids coming on like Twitter and Instagram showing their batting skills.
Batting skills. Yeah. It's a different world. It's a completely different dynamic.
They'll tweet quack quack.
Oh, Twitter is like, there's no barrier anymore to communicate, you know, with, you can... Earlier, you could never say anything directly to commentators and stuff. This Twitter is amazing, right? You just say whatever you want.
Yeah, and whether you hope they don't respond to you.
Whether they respond or no is kind of up to them. But, you know, you at least get to say your piece. And obviously, everyone
you
has...
You get to say a lot on Twitter.
That's what you see in cricket matches, right? I mean...
It can be amazing and toxic at the same time, I think.
Absolutely.
Like, amazing a few times, toxic mostly, I guess. So who would you recommend this book to? Would it be only cricket fans or does it have a wider audience?
No, I think it definitely has a wider audience because it's more about Sanjay Mantrekar as a person through the medium of cricket.
Okay.
So it's not like getting too much into detail of the matches or anything of that sort.
No, I mean, initially when he's making it, when he's making it, he says, I scored 100 here and I did this. But you don't need to... be into cricket and know about cricket to read the book. And it's him as a person, the pressures that he's dealt with, how he's made peace with being dropped for another great of Indian cricket to replace him, being Rahul Dravid at number three, right? So, and how he played his last test match in Ahmedabad in 96 where against South Africa. And he never expected not to play again, but he had to make his peace with that. So, I think there's a lesson for a lot of people in the book.
Especially people from like high performance, high pressure jobs. Yeah. I think this would really benefit them.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, cricketers, sportsmen, they're in the limelight. Especially if you're a cricketer in the Indian cricket team, you're really in the limelight. And then as you fade away from the limelight, those challenges are again very difficult to handle. Yeah?
Yes, like, some people don't even announce their retirement. They're still... Supposedly playing.
On that note, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back after this. Welcome back, guys. We still have with us DJ of Edges and Sledges. Great conversation. Love to talk about cricket anytime. Could go on for hours. And so we're moving a little bit away from cricket now. And the next book we're discussing is The Dinner by Herman Koch. So tell us a little bit about this book. What's the premise of it? And, you know, how did you land up picking up this book?
So I got recommended this book by a friend called Vasant. So he's a friend of mine from university. And my wife and I both went to the same university with him. And he recommended it. It's quite a short book. So you can probably finish it on one plane ride. It's about 2.5-3 hours worth of reading.
Okay.
So this came out in 2009, kind of before the Gone Girls of the world and the Gillian Flynns of the world that... would write these shocking stories, right? And so it's by a Dutch author called Herman Koch. And it's about the story of, as the name suggests, the dinner. There's two brothers meet with their wives to discuss what's going on with their kids. They've both got a son each. And their sons have been captured on CCTV performing some kind of violent act in an ATM somewhere. But they've not been identified by the police yet. So the plan at that dinner is to discuss how to deal with this and how to protect the boys or whatever.
It seems like a very interesting premise straight away.
And it's because you think your identification of the characters and the character traits, because you start off thinking this person is not a very nice person. That person is a better person because one of them is a politician. One person is a normal guy. So there's obviously the usual sibling rivalry between them. And staying with the theme of like father, son, sibling rivalry, very, very family oriented, this podcast at the moment. But it's about how the lengths people go to protect their families. And it's got a nice twist at the end and stuff. So it's very, I found it a very interesting read because it was very different from anything else that I'd read before.
Right. So who would you recommend this book to and why?
So anyone who likes... kind of unexpected twists, and I'm not sure there's anybody who doesn't like that.
Yeah.
So if you want an unexpected twist at the end of the book where you totally don't see it coming, totally blindsided, definitely recommend it to those people. I would recommend it to people who would enjoy books written by foreign authors which have been translated into English and have not been messed up.
Okay.
So okay. I've had experiences with books like, maybe I shouldn't say it, but My Name Is Red. I just find it impossible to read.
Right, right.
It's Orhan Pamuk. I've tried it 4 or 5 times now and I just cannot get through it. Because it's a very interesting premise. Mm-hmm. It's a dead body is giving a story about how they died.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a murder mystery, right? But by the time I get to who's killed that person, I've given up because it's been translated so difficult. It's just difficult writing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Whereas
right.
this is nice and easy writing. It's a quick read. As I said, short and sweet, good twist. Definitely recommend it.
Does it have an underlying message that, you know, you can probably share with us?
I'd say people are weird is the underlying message.
Lovely.
There's an undercurrent to the book. It's an uncomfortable undercurrent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you don't quite know where it's going.
Right.
So I would say that would be the message I'd give. People are weird.
Interesting.
Just the premise that, you know, what length would you go? That's such an interesting question in itself. Like, what length would you go to protect your family?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of movies and a lot of books have been written kind of in that same theme. And very interesting. I think this one I should definitely pick up. And to all our listeners, anyone in want
traveling next time,
anyone in want of an unexpected suspense ending, I think this is a good book to pick up, right? The Dinner by Homan
Koch. And I love like short books that you can read in like one journey, like you said. It's perfect.
A plane ride, I think, is a 2.5 hour plane ride is the ideal time that a book should be, I think, in today's days.
With our attention spans.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I find it harder to read longer books now. Not that I don't, but I've seen, or I find it easier to listen to audiobooks while I'm working out or like running or something. So, So the next book that we're going to be talking about is A Brief History of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson. So tell us a little bit about this book. How did you happen to pick it up? Was it a gift or?
So actually my dad recommended this book to me and he's a writer himself. So I tend to ignore most of his recommendation, but this one turned out to be quite good. He recommended it to me because it's a book. So I studied science at school, but then I went in to become a lawyer.
Okay.
Because I found science actually quite, I finished it at school, class 12, and then I moved back to the art.
Right.
I did a BA, LLB. But I always had an interest in science, which I think was killed a little bit by the school system.
How it's taught.
So physics, chemistry, maths,
Actually super interesting.
It's extremely interesting. I mean, this is a fascinating book. And that's the reason why I absolutely love it.
Okay.
The way he's written it, right? It's science for lay people.
Okay.
And so I'll give you an example of what he says. He says, so we all know how an atom is structured.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's got all its mass in the middle of the atom. When I say middle of the atom, it's in the nucleus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very densely packed and all of that. You know all of those facts. But how do you imagine an atom? He asks you to imagine an atom and imagine the atom as a cathedral.
Okay.
And the nucleus is a fly in the cathedral. That's how densely it's packed.
Wow.
Mm. So that is the kind of imagery that he evokes. He starts off with like, the fact that you're reading this book is incredible. All of these amazing things have happened in science for you to be sitting here and reading this book. And he traces the evolution of the human race right from where it starts off with a single cell.
Wow.
And he talks about like, so it talks about where people appear on the timeline of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he says humans, if you look at since the earth existed, if you're looking at a 24-hour clock, we've appeared on the face of this earth at about 11:40 p.m. So that is how insignificant we are. So every time I read that book, I'm just like, I mean, we're saying we've got to save the planet and all of that. The planet's fine. We're just trying to save ourselves.
That's true. That's true.
And it's a lot like, you know, Sapiens for me, I think. It gave me a whole different perspective to evolution as opposed to what we've ever studied. And it's just a different, you know, way to imagine the same situation, which is amazing. And I think that's the success of a good writer also.
Especially, you know, science writing. Like science was widely held belief is that science is difficult to learn and stuff. The truth is that, you know, if you have an inclination towards it, it's very if you take out the, you know, the examination part of it and all that, if you're just learning for learning, it's so fascinating because I always tell people that science is the magic of our world.
It's incredible.
It really is, because some of the things that happen,
it's like on the job training, right? Your life is everywhere around you. So it should be taught in that way rather than it being just instructive.
And you need to get 99% or you need to get 100%. Or practical metta chahiye. You identify this salt and this base. You're like, that's not what this is about. Look, I mean, it's just a fascinating book. Anybody, I wish I'd read it or it had come out 5 or 6 years before I left school. It would have been a different story, I think.
I think a lot of books, including this one, that are coming out in today's times, I wish they were around like 20 years back. Because then I would have had a 20-year head start. On the way I'm thinking right now, right? it's like now you have to go back and like change the way your thought processes are to kind of understand what...
Now you've got a head start for the next 20.
For the next 20.
Look at it like that. But any other interesting, you know, scientific facts that he's put in a different perspective in the book that you'd like to share?
So it's been a little while since I read it, but the other thing that stuck with me is him talking about kind of... asteroids and how lucky we are not to get hit on a daily basis. And you're just like, wow, okay, we don't even think about this stuff. And then he goes through the scenario about how it hits, an asteroid hits somewhere. It's quite fatalistic in some ways, but it hits somewhere in the US and that's just going to be wiped out in a microsecond. It'll take about quarter of a second before it hits London, and then like the world will just come to an end as you know it. And the other thing, the fact that he gave is about how Jellystone National Park in the U.S. is about 600,000 years overdue for an eruption. And when that happens, we're done. So, again, it's just about putting all the pressures we have about our daily lives just into context. I mean, whenever you're stressed the next time, I'd suggest pick up that book. And
So, there's a... underlying theme to all the books that you've chosen. Either it's a, you know, cricket scenario with a personal relationship, or it's about science with more perspective. Very, very interesting.
Great. So this book, I think, is a must pick up for everyone who has the slightest inclination towards anything scientific.
Absolutely.
Because I think we all should reignite that kind of learning, or that spark of learning that we had, which was, and I completely agree with you, our schooling system was, it wasn't bad, but I just feel it was, I don't know, not the most conducive to learning.
I mean, it was focused on
marks and like becoming a good employee when you graduate. So yeah, great. So where can we find the podcast? The Edges and Sedges,
obviously,
podcast?
On the IVM podcast network, IVM app, Google, as well as iOS, as well as Android. And we're on Apple, Spotify, wherever else you get your podcast. So yeah, onetiponehand.com is our blog address if you want to come and visit our blog.
Awesome.
And where can we find you on social media?
So I'm at Dhananjay Chuck, my full name at Twitter. I'm at DJ Chuck on Instagram. Facebook as well, Dhananjay Chuck. But Edges and Sledges is One Tip, One Hand across the board. So Instagram, Facebook and Twitter is One Tip, One Hand. So come and say hi.
Awesome.
Awesome.
And it was great having you on the show, and we hope to have you again.
No, absolute pleasure. Point. Thank you both so much for taking the time.
Great.
Thank you.
And a big thank you to all our listeners. You can follow the Open Library Project on LinkedIn, Instagram and Facebook for latest updates on our events. And stay tuned for the next paperback podcast on IVM Podcasts. Happy reading. You can follow IVM Podcasts on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter at IVM Podcasts. Listen to Paperback on the IVM Podcast app, website or wherever you listen to podcasts.